Understand that the purpose of the gospel is not to revolutionize the social institutions, but to revolutionize hearts. It's not about social institutions. It's not about social issues. It's not about the social place, the social climate, or the social institution. It's about hearts.
You know, when you think about it, there probably is a lot in every one of our lives that we would like to change. All of us could have some level of dissatisfaction about many things. But the two questions that ought to be asked are these. Where does that come from, and where does it lead? Where does your dissatisfaction come from? In other words, why are you so dissatisfied? Today on Seeds of Commitment, Lance Cook will continue his studies in 1 Corinthians 7, which deals with marital issues and relationships. Today, Lance will encourage us to bloom where we're planted, a lesson on increasing your contentment with life. For today's broadcast of Seeds of Commitment, here's Lance.
We will be picking up in verse 17. But as we've noted in this great chapter, Paul, of course, is dealing with problems in the Corinthian church, dealing with misconceptions, as we've noted, and misbehavior by the Christians in regards to marriage, singleness, and celibacy. So in the first seven verses of this chapter, Paul establishes that very general principle that marriage is normal among Christians. I don't care what society is saying. I don't care what society is doing. God looks at it as normal. God looks at it as something that is wonderful and highly beneficial. And then, of course, he looks at singleness, as we go back and forth between the two topics, he looks at singleness really as a special gift from God. Didn't we cover that last Wednesday night? A special season, a special gift. Some are called, of course, to a longer season of singleness. Some are called to a lifelong calling of singleness, where they are to remain celibate. But within the realm of the single life, you are to stay pure sexually. That particular privilege of intimacy is reserved for marriage. And so Paul, of course, has dealt with that in the first seven verses there. Then in verses 8 through 16, again, he begins to take that same basic truth in which he was talking in regards to marriage and singleness, and he begins to apply it to four different groups. In verses 8 through 9, those who were formerly married. Now, we talked about this all on Sunday morning. Don't have a whole lot of time to recap. We got a lot to cover today. But again, get the study tapes on 1 Corinthians 7 if you haven't caught our studies. I think this is the fourth one in this chapter that we've had together. So get the study tapes. Make sure you understand these principles. But applying that basic principle in regards to marriage and singleness, specifically to the married there in verses 8 and 9, those who were formerly married. Then those who are married to believers, specifically, he talks to them in verses 10 and 11. And then in verses 12 through 13, those who are married to unbelievers who want to remain married. Then in verses 14 through 16, he begins to address those who are married to unbelievers who would actually want to leave the marriage. Now again, just to kind of recap and solidify that, in God's sight, the bond between a husband and a wife, man, it is to be till death do we part. And so death would allow one spouse, of course, out of a marriage. The only other considerations which we talked about Sunday morning and Saturday night, of course, were adultery there in Matthew chapter 19. And then in verses 15 and 16, we talked a bit about the consideration of abandonment. If someone just leaves the marriage, what happens to that unbeliever, that departs? When they depart, what happens, to the believer? What are the options? We considered all of that again on Sunday morning. The goal, of course, in verse 15, we have been called to peace. That's the goal. God, of course, encourages forgiveness. God encourages restoration. The verse that I used, of course, out of 2 Corinthians chapter 5 was that verse where God has called us to a ministry of reconciliation. In verses 18 and 19, it says, "Now all things are of God." And it goes on to say, who has reconciled us unto himself, and Jesus Christ. And then it goes on to say, he has given us the ministry of reconciliation. That is, that God was in Christ reconciling the world to himself, not imputing their trespasses to them. And then he has committed to us that very word of reconciliation. So we have the word of reconciliation, we have the ministry of reconciliation, and God, of course, holds us to that standard. There will be those situations within a Christian's life where they are holding on to the marriage for all of the right reasons. And then there might be the time where someone, of course, steps out and abandons the marriage or goes out and starts another relationship. In those days, they even went out and just married other people. What happens then to that person that is sitting there trying to fulfill the ministry of reconciliation and is trying to fulfill the word of reconciliation? And I even had some people approach me and say, Lance, this is tough. I say, yes, it is. But God will never call you to do something without giving you the grace to enable you to do that something. Are there times, are there situations when God would, you know, put that in their heart where they can actually be released from their marriage vows? Well, under those two conditions, I do believe there are those particular times when that happens. But again, God has called us to reconciliation. So you've got to do all to be reconciled and give God that opportunity, that season to perform that reconciliation. And if God puts it in your heart that, hey, you know, there's been adultery or there's been abandonment, and you know what? You're freed up. If God has put that in your heart, you've got biblical or scriptural confirmation on that, and through a long time of fasting and praying, you feel released, then that's between you and the Lord. But again, we hit all these issues, and it just kind of comes up sometimes as I'm recapping. Forgive me if I sound a bit repetitious, but I think these are important issues that we need to really understand as far as what God is saying in his word. So we pick up now in verses 17 through, I'm going to go down to maybe 27 or 28 tonight. And here Paul begins to deal with, you know, social behavior and social responsibility. So we talked about the problems, the misconceptions, and the misbehavior for the Corinthian believers in regards to singleness and marriage. And, of course, there were all kinds of questions within the heart of these new believers regarding social behavior and social responsibility as well. And so he's going to hit some of this stuff and then come back to the married topic and the single topic as well. Verse 17. But as God has distributed to each one, as the Lord has called each one, so let him walk. And so I ordain in all the churches. Was anyone called? Why circumcised? Let him not become uncircumcised. Was anyone called while uncircumcised? Let him not be circumcised. Circumcision is nothing, and uncircumcision is nothing. But keeping the commandments of God is what matters. Now let each one remain in the same calling in which he was called. Now to just read through this letter and to get to verse 17 down to around verse 20. You know, you're kind of going through the marriage, the single thing, and all of a sudden, circumcision. What in the world is Paul talking about? What in the world is happening here? Well, we've got to remember that as Paul is writing this letter, he's writing a letter to a church that has become very much divided. And they've become divided again because they've allowed the world, the world's philosophies, the world's lifestyle, the world's opinions and whatnot, to come in and affect them as Christians, to come in and affect them as a church. Consequently, there was divisions that were setting in from all kinds of various reasons. Now, what was happening is people were becoming discontent. Several areas of discontent were widespread within this church. Some believers, as we've noted, wanted to change their marital status from being single, of course, to married. Shall we do that? What should we do now that we're Christians? Some, of course, that were married said, man, I would like to be single. And then maybe one unbelieving partner to a believing one. And then, of course, there were some, as we read on, we'll see here, there was issues with slavery as well. Some were slaves and wanted to be free. Some were brought into the church as Jews. What happens to my convictions towards the laws and the traditions that I've practiced my whole life, now that I'm part of this church? Some were Gentiles. And they, of course, were saying, what happens to all of these social standards and these social issues that I used to believe in practice once I was a Gentile? Well, the church, we know, had misused and abused the truth of their Christian freedom in many different ways. They had taken Christian freedom to mean to do basically as they pleased instead of a freedom to do as God pleased. The unity of this church, as we've noted several times now, this church in Corinth was seriously fractured. There were numerous parties of factions, that we saw in chapter 1 and chapter 3 again. And now we see these groups who were encouraging those with the gift of celibacy, maybe, to get married. We talked about that on Sunday. Other groups were encouraging those who were married to become celibate. Slaves, of course, would have had questions. They would have been confused. Many were rebelling under their bondage and trying to find some sort of spiritual justification in demanding their freedom. All of these social issues. Many different questions in regards to social issues. We know that in most areas, the gospel stands in very sharp contrast to the standards and the values of the world. Yet, God's word or God's church does not disdain, nor does it seek to destroy governments or societies or families for that matter. Whenever the gospel we see is received in an area, in a government, in a country, whenever we see it received, believed, obeyed, some of the most obvious byproducts are going to be a better government, a better society, better families, better marriages. But Christians can be Christians anywhere. There are Christians that are living underneath dictatorships right now. Christians living underneath a democracy right now. Christians even living under, some form of anarchy right now. We could be Christians whether we are men, whether we are women, whether we are married, whether we are single, whether we are divorced, whether we're a Jew, whether we're a Gentile, whether we're circumcised, whether we're not circumcised, whether we're a slave or whether we are free. We could be Christians in Russia. We could be Christians in China. We could be Christians in La Habra. Amazing. Whatever we are and wherever we are, we can be Christians. Understand that the purpose of the gospel is not to revolutionize the social institutions, but to revolutionize hearts. It's not about social institutions. It's not about social issues. It's not about the social place, the social climate, or the social institution. It's about hearts. The gospel is directed at mankind's heart, at the human heart, not at society. Now, because faithful Christians are better husbands and better wives and better workers and better friends and better slaves or better masters or better sons and daughters, overall better citizens, they cannot help but contributing to bettering societies. The gospel can be planted and take root wherever there is a person to hear it and accept it. So Paul says we should bloom right where we are planted, where the Lord has assigned us and where God has called us. Therein we should walk. And this principle, of course, is universal. It was not only given to this much strained and very much divided church in Corinth a couple of thousand years ago. They had contentions and all kinds of strife between them and divisions. But it's also for us today. That's what Paul is saying. God's primary purpose for the church in every nation is to go out and evangelize that nation, to change the world through spiritual regeneration, not a social revolution. Christians should willingly accept the situation in which God has placed them and be content right there, whether they are a Jew, whether they are a Gentile, whether they are a slave, whether they are free. Christians should be willing to accept that situation into which God has placed them, and they should be content in that situation in which God had placed them. Whether they're married, whether they're single, we should not be preoccupied with changing our outward circumstances. Now, this is a principle against, which our human nature absolutely rebels. And that's why Paul states it three times in these next few verses over and over so that we would get it, so that we would understand it. So his first illustration in verse 18 is interesting. Was anyone called while circumcised? Let him not become uncircumcised. And then called while uncircumcised, let him not be circumcised. Now, of course, this has to do with the identity of the Jew and the Gentile. Being called by God, of course, always refers to the call of salvation. So Paul's saying, I want to talk to you about the overall call of salvation in regards to you Jews, in regards to you Gentiles as well. When a Jew is saved, he should not try to, you know, become like a Gentile. Now, circumcision in the Roman world was perceived as something quite embarrassing. According to the Maccabean writings in that particular time, in that particular culture, there were Jewish men who actually went through operations and made themselves uncircumcised. Josephus tells us that during the Greek rule, during this time, and actually about 100 years up to this time, it was common for men who wanted to be accepted into the Greek society. They were Jews. They were circumcised. To go and to actually have this surgery performed to give the appearance that they have never been circumcised. The practice was so common within the Jewish culture that the rabbis in some of their traditional writings write against this. They labeled this a Greek word epastopakis, which basically means to draw over, to pull towards. They were trying to fit into society. This is the term that Paul used here for uncircumcised as well. And the same principle applies to the Gentiles. Has anyone been called an uncircumcision? Let him not be circumcised. Again, Gentiles who became Christians, you don't have to become like a Jew. The book of Galatians has a lot to say about this. In that very legalistic season, there were the Judaizers that came in. These were Jews that were very legalistic, and they came in many times behind the works that Paul started. And they would, of course, come in and say, well, it's great what Paul is teaching, but, you know, there's also some laws that you've got to adhere to if you really want to be saved. And so these Gentiles would be there. They've been saved for, you know, however long, a few months. And all of a sudden they hear some guy come in and say, well, if you really want to be right with God, you've got to be circumcised as well. And the whole thought was you've really got to become a Jew in order to be saved. But Paul, of course, wrote that particular book, challenging that and refuting that and saying that's a bunch of hogwash. It's a different gospel altogether. And don't fall prey to that. It's all about grace. But the whole idea is circumcision is not necessary either for salvation or for a blessing. Many of the people in Corinth, they felt, were, you know, falling prey to this false teaching, was saying, well, you know, you won't necessarily be saved by being circumcised as a Gentile, but man, God would really bless you for that. He would reward you for that. But the Bible doesn't teach that at all. Circumcision is not necessary either for salvation or for a blessing. It has spiritual significance, or no spiritual significance, or value for the Christian at all. So that's why Paul says in verse 19, circumcision is nothing and uncircumcision is nothing as well. In either case, you know, you look at this, it was spiritually wrong. It added an outward form to the gospel that the Lord does not require. It has no spiritual merit or meaning. So let me set you guys right on this issue. What matters, he says in verse 19, are not social issues, it's social acceptance. But what matters is what is spiritual. What matters, and he brings it back to the word, is keeping the commandments of God. He brings it back to obeying God, obeying His word. Obedience is the only mark upon your life that you should be concerned with. That being faithfulness, that is what the Lord, of course, is looking for. That is what the Lord is going to recognize. Now, obedience, is sometimes costly, but it's always possible. We can be obedient anywhere, anytime, and in any circumstances. The issue is internal, guys. That's what he's saying, not external. And then Paul's going to repeat the principle again by now using the illustration or the example of slaves in verse 21. Now, were you called while a slave? Do not be concerned about it. But if you can be made free, rather use that freedom. For he who is called in the Lord while a slave is the Lord's freedman. Likewise, he who is called while free is Christ's slave. You were bought at a price. Therefore, do not become slaves of men. Brethren, let each one remain with God in that calling in which he was called. More social issues. Once again, Paul's saying, hey, just be content in who you are. Be content in what you are. Be content to stay in the condition of what you were when you were saved. whether it is a racial issue or a social issue. Now, the illustration again this time, as we noted, is with slaves. Understand, as Paul teaches here, Paul's point is not to approve slavery. It's not to suggest that it is a good condition, you know, at all. His point is that if a person is a slave, he is still able to live a Christian life. He is every bit as able to obey and serve Jesus Christ as a slave than those who are not. No circumstances, no matter how terrible or painful or unjust, can keep us from being a Christian. Now, Paul wrote to the Ephesians in Ephesians chapter 6, verses 5 through 8, and said, "To slaves, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, and do that in sincerity of your heart, as to Christ, not by way of eye service, as men pleasers, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. With good will render service as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatever good thing each one does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether slave or free." Now, to some people, social issues and social status matters. Their lot in life matters. Their status in life matters. Their state in life matters. They're not content by comparison to other people's lives. I had one individual one time. He was really upset with me, and I just kind of sat down and talked to him, and I said, "What's your beef, man? Why are you so upset? Every time I talk to you, you know, you give me that ugly look. What's up?" He says, I think you've got a better, you know, hand dealt to you than I did. I got the bad hand dealt to me. You got the good hand." Okay, well, tell me my cards. What are they? Let's lay them all on the table. Let's see what you've got. You know, I've got the royal flush, and you've got, you know, whatever. And he says, "You know, you got the ability to be raised in a Christian home, and you've had, you know, those advantages," and just went down this line of thinking with me. And the only thing I said is, "So do I have some sort of inside track with God over you because you were not raised in a Christian home? Now that we're all saved and you have your opportunity to know Christ and to serve Christ, you know, I don't have an advantage over you." There are some people, though, that look at the social status. Oh, that person's got a better job, or they live in a better area. They have, you know, more liberties. They have more freedom. And that was the problem as well in Corinth. There were slaves that were being saved. Now, when we, you know, begin to, you know, picture this, you know, understand what Paul is saying to the slave. Understand what he's calling them to. He's basically saying, okay, hey, you might have, you know, a bad hand dealt to you, but you know what? There's no such thing as a bad hand when you become a Christian. That all goes away. We don't have really in Christ advantages as being Americans. We really don't. As he says here, the slave was simply to, in his heart, be right with his master, honestly and sincerely. Later on, in Colossians 3, Paul would say, "As for the Lord rather than man, you serve the Lord rather than men." So they had a very unique place, Paul said. They had a very unique place to exhibit the fruit of salvation. Man, what a dark life slavery might be, but there's certain advantages. It's a great place to show your heart for Jesus Christ, to model servanthood in that particular area, to be, you know, loyal and honest with a sincere heart.
You know, today's study could be summarized and titled as "Bloom Where You're Planted: A Lesson on Contentment." As we've been learning today on Seeds of Commitment, as Lance has been teaching us in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, and there's still much more to learn in this chapter, and I hope you can make it a point to join us for our next broadcast right here on Seeds of Commitment. But in the meantime, if you would like to receive this study in its entirety, either on audio cassette or compact disc, make sure you mention tape number 4602-20. That's 4602-20. And simply call us here at Seeds of Commitment at 714-441-2845. We accept Visa, MasterCard, and Discover Card. Again, simply call us at 714-441-2845. If you'd like to write a letter to us, your comments, and as well as send us a check of today's study, simply write to Seeds of Commitment, 1370 South Euclid Street, La Habra, California, 90631. To get all this contact information about our ministries and as well as Seeds of Commitment. To know more about our ministry, simply go to our website. The address is www.seedsofcommitment.org. That's www.seedsofcommitment.org. And then make it a point to join us for our next study right here on Seeds of Commitment as Lance Cook continues his studies in 1 Corinthians. Until then, may God bless you as you stay committed to the Word of God. With my whole heart.